Radio.com. And incidentally, the Facebook show proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. And I also wanted to mention those in the chat room that if at any point you are in the chat room, you can also be on GuerrillaMedia.co.nz because the chat room's actually embedded on the side there, so it doesn't matter what article you're reading or anything like that. So there's quite a lot of interesting stuff on there. For instance, if we have a look through some of the headlines, magnetic polar shifts cause massive global superstorms. This is posted in by After America. You know, you think about this sort of, uh-oh, it's another huge fracking freaking disaster that scares the bejesus out of absolutely everybody. And the funny thing is, this is just one of many articles with almost equally as frightening headlines. They're all equally scary. For example, for preppers, anywhere from incredibly practical to practically certifiable, talking about the big, big range there is amidst the preppers. Now, what would you think the preppers are, eh? All those people who are prepping for the collapse of society, end of the world, stockpiling food, weapons in remote areas. Okay. Think about keeping yourself prepared. It doesn't necessarily have to be about location. Doesn't necessarily have to be about resources. As I've said many times, it is about your brain and your thinking. If that is still working, then you will stay alive. And also, speaking of those of you who do manage to stay alive, they'll have resettlement camps. They are here. Wake up. There's another headline. They come at you from every direction. That's why there's no escape. And that's why you have to expand in every direction. I've had an occurrence to me that when you want to be a talk radio show host, you know the best way to get your training to be a good talk radio show host is? To regularly call in to talk radio, particularly with show hosts who you think have a style that sort of suits you. And just call in. You'll probably be terrible the first time. We all were. But the more you keep calling in, the more polished, well-spoken, and, shall we say, articulate your repartee becomes. And if you're capable of talking to virtually anybody on the spot about nearly any topic, still be able to hold your ground and go where the conversation, basically, if you can follow the conversation, like if somebody's talking incredibly complicated stuff to you, mathematical, willy vanilly, chicken nugget type, pink goo, marmite in your toothpaste type scary stuff that nobody would ever think possible. You know, that kind of stuff. If you could follow it and keep going through, and especially if somebody interrupts you while you're in mid-speech and asks you a clarification on something you said, you better be prepared to be able to answer those questions. Okay? So that way, when you get interrupted, you act as a kind of judo. You use their energy that they're pushing onto you to stop you, and you take it by the arm, and you do a little spin. And meanwhile, they've done a flip and are on the floor, and you're still standing perfectly still. And what happens then is you can actually start to convince people of concepts. If you're capable of answering their questions completely reasonably, rationally, without shouting or getting out of control, you will start to wake up a lot of people. I'm now starting to get messages from all sorts of people. And this is a no small part to thanks to all the experience that I've had, all the great listeners that have called in, great guests we've had, the production team that we've got back here at American Freedom Radio. All of this has culminated in people now messaging me all the time saying that either I help them wake up or they're using me to wake their friends up or whatever. It's great. Okay. I've woken up. Fantastic. Come with me if you want. If you don't want to, well, we have resettlement camps for you. Marshall, red zone in America. Chicago locked down. If transport security pant downs at public venues, thousands of drones over the skies of America, and the National Security Agency's new echelon-like listening center in Utah weren't enough. Do you see what's happening here? Look, you have a look at the old school communism, okay? The Stasis and KGBs and the very nasty, nasty socialism that we've kind of experienced in the whole thing that had everybody's hands behind their heads like prisoners, unable to do anything whatsoever, unable to speak the way they want to with collars around their necks and cuffs around their wrists. All slaves. And today, we're all slaves as well. It's as if nothing's changed except the appearance. It's as if we're living in a global... How would you put it? A global Sherlock Holmes mystery. Yes. And in fact, fabulous is the design and detail of the scumbaggery that very few people even are capable of seeing through it. And this is the thing. Not everybody is capable of understanding what a conspiracy really is, the broader implications. Some people are simply not capable of it, or at the very least not capable right away, and might need a enormous amount of, I don't know. You know how when people get injured and they require a lot of physiotherapy in order to learn how to use that leg again? Well, becoming a truther is like a brain injury because you have to learn how to think again. You were told to think and indoctrinated through the schooling and the media and all of the various eclectic effects on your health, aspartame. Oh, that kills your brain like nobody's business. Especially if you're drinking it out of an aluminium can. And aluminium can cause Alzheimer's. A little bit every day. Who knows what'll happen to you? This is the thing. You got to think long term. Is it good for me now? No, it's not. Well, then it's not going to be good for me long term either. Basically, if something ain't good for you, it's just not good for you. And you better not to have it. I mean, I'm starting to think that the whole message of temptation in life is the thing that makes us want those quick fixes, those quick energy highs like sugars and complex burger carbohydrogenated meat stick. Egg pate, whatever it is they put on these alleged meals today. Whatever they put on it, you already know that it ain't good. The more details you get on it, they just prove to you more and more how it ain't good. For instance, everybody knows McDonald's is bad for you, and yet, in the middle of the night, when they're home, after having a few drinks with the boys and they just need a feed, what's the only effing place open? You know? And a lot of times in terms of drive-through, oh, look, golden arches. You can see them from bloody miles away. It's as if they're like some description of beacon of burgers jutting out into the skyline. Like Satan's hand, giving you two fingers that are curled over, like bad little devil horns, yellow and booby-like. Giant glowing golden boobies from miles away, and I've just had drinks, and I'm real hungry, and they promised me 100% beef. What what's 100% beef? Well, it means, you know, it's got to be beef, right? 100% of it. Oh, okay. Well, let's have a look. Oh, just down under where it says 100% beef, it has a registered trademark insignia. So that means that they have a brand name called 100% New Zealand Prime Beef. And they brand that whatever it is they're selling you as that. And because it's a brand, you don't recognize that it's a brand, of course. You think it actually means real beef. No, I'm sorry. We had to lie to you. Not because, you know, we're bad people or anything. Okay, it is because we're bad people. But, you know, everybody's got to feed their kids. And I'm just going to make sure that I'm not going to feed the kids the crap that I'm feeding your kids. You know, the justification. Oh, the justification for hurting other people. They're endless. There's quite substantial amounts of justifications and rationalizations that we all emit every day, like a beacon, a signal, some kind of homing beacon that guides us gradually towards accepting tyranny, like it was the best thing since French sliced heads. Oh, yeah, it'll be a revolution, all right. We're going to lead this pub. Oh, I was sitting around with some communists one time. And they were singing songs, like old communist songs that people used to sing. Now, when you sing songs together, they you can build revolutions on them, essentially. Well, look at the 60s, for instance, or any time. Music's really important. But basically what these people were all saying, all the words that they were using were, shoot them all, they're not commies, and we're gonna spill their guts of their children and what have you. You know, it's just beyond belief how ruthless the whole ideology really is at its base core. And so many people have that. We all have these really, really strong ideologies that we simply don't understand the ramifications of, and yet keep following them blindly anyway. Even once we do know the ramifications of what it is we're doing, a lot of people don't quit their job at McDonald's. They need that job. They got to feed their kids. It's about your immediate survival that people have become focused on. And I think it's once you've gotten past that point of only needing to focus on your necessary survival, once your survival's basically covered and you're all sweet as an all G unit, then you start thinking about other things. Other things that you've actually got time for now. Perhaps thinking about how bad the taxation is. How much of your rights have been taken away. How much the prices of everything is going up substantially for everybody. You actually have time to start thinking about these things rather than working just to stay alive. And surprisingly, actually it's pretty unsurprising, most people don't live in that bracket there where they've actually got time to care about stuff. They can't do it. They've got to take care of the kids, they've got to do this, that, and the other. But then again, you have a look at heaps of truthers, they're doing all of that and listening to the radio and doing all of this. Because those other people, instead of listening to the radio and watching documentaries online and what have you, are going out getting a new DVD from the overnight rental place Blockbuster's dead, goodness knows what. Maybe they're just watching the ripped versions of the movies online too. And it would be just as easy to watch a doco or watch a talk by some grand activist or whatever. Because educating yourself becomes kind of fun. And the reason why it's fun is because it's interesting. Okay, you ever have a conversation with somebody and they don't agree with you at all, but they keep listening, don't they? And then after the conversation's kind of done, the only thing that they've really got to say for themselves is, yeah, interesting. And they're thinking, they may not wake up at that moment. But you've reached out and you've touched somebody. Don't worry about any people who might have negative reactions to you if you start speaking your mind or whatever. If they start having a negative reaction or like give you a look or something, Just be aware of your surroundings. Notice what their reaction is like and don't bring it up again. Not for a while. Just leave that little truth grenade there. Sounds like a smart plan, doesn't it? Huh? Yeah. That's etiquette. You don't have to shove 9/11 truth down somebody's throat. They're not going to get it if you do that. They're going to become even more hostile towards you if you keep bringing it up. That's why family members start hating their family members who are truthers, because they try to jam it down their throat, because it's the most interesting thing that they've talked about, seen, written, or heard about their entire lives, and they just want to share it with everybody, and they want everybody to know what's going on because it's so important, etc., etc., all those things. But it doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, just be aware of your surroundings whenever you're talking to anybody about this, is my warning. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Just want to know, ladies and gentlemen, whose side are you on? We'll be right back. There's only one thing I need to know, whose side you on, whose side you on. Well, there's only one thing I need to know, whose side are you on?
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's wrong with the world? People kill people that other people command. Middle East is a modern day attack on the native land. Project eugenics.
Welcome land back.
The common man expand the military industrial.
Talking about expanding the military-industrial complex, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And you can also join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/chat-room.html. Chat-room.html. And we have the caller lines open. So if you'd like to give us a buzz, the number is 218-339-8525. Unfortunately, due to unforeseeable circumstances and technology and technical difficulties, we'll not be having a guest for this first hour. But usually, the callers are in some cases even better than the guests we have. It's quite strange, and this is another interesting point about the show is that we set the bar incredibly low. Because if you let everything in, you'll find those little treasures that nobody else will find. You remember a story a while back? This dude was prospecting in New York. The number's 218-339-8525, if he's listening. And on the sidewalk, right? Getting in there, dust, little gems, all of that kind of stuff. Find everything. Because around that area, there were jewelers and whatnot, and all these people that are cutting away at gold and diamonds and goodness knows what other kind of gems every day in their workshops. And occasionally, you know, every now and again, a little gem or a few flakes of gold or something of that nature would get on their shoes, and they'd walk out onto the sidewalk and they'd get lodged in the little cracks between the plates of the sidewalk. And so this guy made a living off it. So he just shows him the littlest opportunistic moment of thought can really, really become quite powerful. Now, I was wondering if we could actually bring on a guest at the moment as well to help us field some callers when we get them. Evelyn Gilbert, she wants to come on to talk about John Key as it stands with the historical context, because our Prime Minister's quite the scumbag, as anybody who listens to the show regularly will know. But it also pays to repeat, and this is another piece of advice I gave a budding talk radio show host the other day. the listenership, they don't listen to every single show. So if you come up with a really important point or something like that, it actually pays to repeat it. You know, constantly. You got to be on the run with this sort of stuff because, basically, you can't expect everybody to be paying attention to you all the time. That's kind of arrogant. At least I thought so. And what's happening right now with the government, because there's quite a lot of interesting issues coming up. Asset sales, and everybody knows that when the IMF comes in and tries to seize control of your country through their Rothschild banking arms and what have you. I think that stripping the country of all of its wealth is the primary plot. So think about it. Look at an entire country. Okay? Let's say you look at a country like the United States and just think how much wealth you could extract out of that whole nation. It'd be substantial. And how do you want to get a hands on it? Well, firstly, you come in and you tell them that their economy is all so badly flaccid and that you need new leadership. And that new leadership comes on to tell you that he's going to save you from the global financial crisis and all that kind of stuff. And then he turns out selling the wealth off to the global financiers who caused the global financial crisis so that all the real wealth in the country gets assimilated into their designs. Instantaneously. That's basically what's going on here. It's a very, very scary, sinister plot, but it's a very simple scheme too. Once you recognize the magician's trick, you are no longer amazed enough to even wonder. You already know, and you can tell what he's going to say next. You know which part of the act he's going to perform in the upcoming prestigious title. You don't get the surprise, the shock, the belief, in other words, in the illusion. The suspension of disbelief. This is a very interesting concept that's been bandied around in films, and I think it's actually being bandied around in reality now. The suspension of disbelief. For example, there's a film called The Watchmen or whatever, and they got this little owl thingy, and apparently they're capable of like just flying from New York all the way down to Antarctica with no refueling stops. They would have had to have 355 times the amount of fuel on board that it was able to travel. Okay, great. So this is a moment where we have the suspension of disbelief. John Key, a global financier, almost one of the people most directly responsible for the creation of derivatives trading in the European bond and derivatives markets. The integral instigator, in other words, that mechanism, derivatives, as Lindsay Williams has said, is the direct instigator of the global financial crisis and the direct predecessor to any depression that we might suffer. So once there's a crack in the derivatives market, it's all over. And you know that they're going to collapse the whole global economy. Okay, those of you who might have been listening on to another show we did with Lindsay Williams just earlier, there were the four signs of financial collapse towards the end of 2012. Number one, cracks in the derivatives market. Number two, currency wars. Number three, trade wars. And number four, the Federal Reserve is forced to raise interest rates. So if you've got a pencil and a paper, you want to write these down. Cracks in the derivative market is number one. Number two, remember number one, cracks in derivative market. Number two, currency wars. Number three, trade wars. And number four, the Federal Reserve will be forced to raise its interest rate. So if you go to guerrillamedia.co.nz, you go down to Lindsay Williams, the four signs of financial collapse at the end of 2012. Lindsay Williams, the four signs of collapse, of financial collapse, sorry, at the end of 2012. You'll be able to see that little snippet and the whole video of the interview with him that he and I did. So good move there. Because I think when you see these things actually happening and when you get warned about them ahead of time, it's almost interesting. But it's actually more scary than whatnot, because you're thinking about, great, it's all doom and gloom. It's a scary, 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 scary world. we're just sitting back and everybody's like, it's like, grab your armchairs, ladies and gentlemen. Kick back and relax. After all, it's just the end of the world. Something to worry about. Come on. There is nothing to worry about, as far as I'm concerned. Whatever the heck happens, we'll all be unprepared for it. So we'll all be on the same boat. And so chips fall where they may. Some people will live through it. Some people will endure hardship. But so is every other generation throughout history, basically except for ours. We're the only generation that hasn't known any hardship or any hard work or anything like that. In the space of a generation, all that freedom that everybody else died and sacrificed themselves for earlier will be snatched away from us in the space of our generation, because we didn't care and we didn't experience it. And more to the point, all those people who came back from seeing all those terrible experiences didn't want to talk about it. So how could our generation, or the baby boomer generation, have any idea what real hardship and conflict and scrounging and depression life and all of that kind of stuff was really about? And so now, through the two generations it's taken for the bulk of humanity to forget about those times, they're going to bring it back. It'll be like, it wouldn't be a neo-depression. It'd be like a retro-depression, you know? I'm sure even John Travolta will wear a white suit again in this retro-depression. And he'll also be flying half a dozen ministers of the Church of Scientology to Haiti to have a boogie off and what have you. You know, this is the kind of end of the world that we all fear. My concern, principally, with the reaction to talk about the end of the world is people don't, basically, they hinge the possibilities on the event side. Okay, they say this is going to happen. I remember, I think it was maybe about a month or two ago, a friend of mine was telling me very, very seriously that in the next month we're going to all die because Comet Elenin's going to hit us. It's going to flash boil the oceans, and anybody 5 miles underground will be hit by volcanic strikes of lava shooting jets through the crust of the earth. There'll be 800-mile-an-hour winds, 1,200-mile-tall tsunamis, 500-mile-wide women trying to rape all the men. You know, it'll be horrible. And sure enough, nothing happened. Some guy had caravans cruising all around the United States, massive billboards, television advertisements, radio. Nothing happened. Everybody watched the movie 2012 and the Zombie Land and goodness knows what. How many times has the world ended in motion picture history? And I'm talking about recent history only. Huge quantities, man. I could probably name like about 50 end of the world films that have been made in the last couple of years. It's extraordinary how many different ways the human race gets wiped out in Hollywood. Why? Alien invasions, natural cataclysms, viruses, blah, 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 blah. Everything the New World Order wants to do to every single one of us gets put in front of us before we know it becomes true. That's the scariest part about watching motion pictures for me, and why sometimes, you know, when I'm watching a movie, I'll actually feel physically sick to my stomach when I see certain bits of the plot revealed and what have you, and I know what's actually really being said to the audience, and everybody's being conditioned. It's like when we're born, we forego the shampoo and we just go straight to the conditioning. Lisa from East Texas calling in. Welcome.
Today. I was thinking as you were talking about hard times, this may sound a bit masochistic and sadistic, but, you know, maybe that's what's wrong with our generation. We haven't been through any real hard times. And, you know, I think all of us know to some extent that suffering produces, it's a refining process. And not that we, any of us, wish to go through anything like that. I don't think we have to wish it on ourselves. But, you know, maybe that's the good that can come out of a really hard time, for a global really hard time. It will help that maybe it will stop the insanity and really bring people back to the basic necessities and you know, values of life. What's really important? No, iPhones, they're not really important. You know, people are important, what, Lisa, and that's what I think.
You're right, because every single time a massive crisis or cataclysm or bad disaster or hard time happens to anybody, so long as they have family that are still alive, they all call each other, you know, just to say, oh, are you okay? It's okay. It's like somebody's living in LA and a person in New Zealand will call them saying, oh, mate, are you okay? It's like this automatic response. It doesn't matter if there's any real threat or anything like that. It brings people together. Now, when there is a real threat, on the other hand, and everybody's facing it, you see communities increasingly just drastically come together. Like in Christchurch, for instance, after the earthquake, an entire neighborhood where nobody knew each other, not a single person knew a single one of their neighbors, within an hour after the earthquake, they had an entire community set up, cleanup teams, getting people water, looking after the elderly. Boom, like magic, we give a frack about each other when we're under threat. Lisa, just hold on until after the break. We'll be right back. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Or join us in the chat room at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. The old love shining through your eyes. Have you ever noticed when you and try this sometime, Lisa? I can yeah. Hear you breathing. Try this sometime when you're watching TV. You have a look at the politicians when they're talking and they're answering questions that the journalists are giving them and what have you. Don't look at their mouths. Don't look at their suits. Don't look at their hair. Don't look at anything. Just look directly into their eyes.
There's nothing.
You will see nothing.
They can't have anything in there, or otherwise they couldn't live it themselves, I don't think. You know,
do you think that politicians are the ultimate empty vessels, just, you know, ripe for demon possession, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it takes a special breed to be one of those, and I wouldn't want to be one. You know, it's compromising, and I don't want to compromise anything in my life. That's selfish, I guess, but maybe wise, too.
I love it how it literally does take a special breed. Like, you have to be related to the last president in order to be the next.
Yeah, that is really completely interesting. And, you know, I wanted to go back to what we were talking about before. I have two... I thought about think, two really important things in going through hard times. And they seem a little bit anachronistic, but let me explain. I think, of course, self-sufficiency or independence is really important in getting through hard times. And at the same time, within that self-sufficiency, it's important to have a level of dependency. And I mean, when I think of those two things, what I'm thinking of is, I think of the Amish. When you think about if there was a, you know, a grid failure or some sort of attack or a bomb or something, and modern technology ceased to function, the only people that would not have a different life would be the Amish. I mean, their lives didn't change a bit, you know, and they really, truly are the epitome of self-sufficiency. Because they do not live on the grid. So
that's because, you know, the grid's been created to ensure that self-sufficiency is an impossibility.
What was that?
The grid has been created so that self-sufficiency is an impossibility.
Oh, absolutely. It's a control mechanism. I mean, that goes back to J.P. Morgan and, you know, Tesla and Edison and so forth. When J.P. Morgan found out that a grid was not needed for Tesla's energy, well, that was it for his funding, you know. That speaks volumes. That's really, really amazing. But the dependency part, I wanted to bring up, I was listening to, I think it was Freighter X's show the other day you were on, and that really cool young man who walked the Mojave Desert, you know, for 3 days. And I thought that was just a beautiful story, how he just, you know, in courage and faith and expectancy, he just stepped out and said, okay, God, you know, I'm going to depend on you completely. So, yeah, I just thought that was neat because that took a lot of courage. And so I think dependency, whether it's on, you know, your spiritual beliefs or your connectedness to your community, it's okay to be dependent in that sense, and it actually makes the self-sufficiency part stronger, you know? It's like a...
Well, I think it's different. Like, there's two types of dependency. There's dependency on government and then dependency on people. Now, let's say, for instance, you're an infant. Your dependency is not to the government. Your dependency is on your mother, because your mother is the one that feeds you, changes you, and keeps you alive, right? Okay, so there's a clear reason for that dependency, and there's a clear barrier between where that dependency can go. Like, for example, the mother can't start charging the infant rent.
That's a great idea. I like that.
Okay, but a government probably would. They'd say, oh, you've got an extra kid. Well, that's going to be an extra taxation on you. Or, well, that's some alimony. Or, well, that's some child support or something of that nature. Children become a revenue source for government the second that they're born. But the problem is the parents don't actually see any benefit of that revenue source. They only, well, they basically become the infant's proxy revenue payoffer.
Right. And schools are set up the same way. You know, the schools only get paid if their kids are in school, you know, a certain number of days and hours a year. Otherwise, they don't get their funding. So they're not really caring that the kids are in school learning. They're caring about getting their money. That's how it's set up here in the States.
Well, here's another thing that the other generation had that we don't have. The ability to support a family on one income.
I know. It's tough. It's very tough. People do it, and I know people that do it on shoestrings, but it takes a lot of creativity and just out-and-out determination and making very, very different lifestyle choices than mainstream America.
Do you think mainstream America has made the lifestyle choices that will ensure their death?
Oh yeah,
like the style of your life is to die with style.
Absolutely, I think so. Or to die in laziness and convenience. For instance, okay, I was thinking of this yesterday. The whole healthcare debate in this country cracked me up because it is polar opposites, statists and crony capitalists, arguing about a false premise based on a non sequitur. And what I mean by that is they're both arguing about having a healthcare system set up in this country that is really people should be running away from. I don't want to pay for the healthcare system as it exists. You know, most insurance companies in this country do not reimburse for chiropractic, for alternative therapy or preventative therapy. And so we're arguing, clamoring, oh, give me my toxic, deadly medical care, you know, or symptom treatment. And so that's what we're really arguing over, conservatives and liberals alike. They're arguing over a system that shouldn't be like it is in the first place. It's a,
you know what's
and
funny?
I'm telling you, listen, I live on the inside of this. My husband is a surgeon. My brother's a surgeon. My sisters were nurses. My father was a surgeon. I come from a whole family. And I see it from the inside out. And it's not that they're malevolent, you know, trying to kill people. It's that they're indoctrinated in medical school, in residency, by the pharmaceutical companies. And because that's just the way it is. And
in other words, they're not Dr. Frankenstein himself. The doctors are just Frankenstein's monster now.
Yeah,
a creature that's been conditioned, pieced together, conjured up, and for all intents and purposes, a perfectly innocent creature.
Right. It's a creature. It is. It's a creature in the Black Lagoon. You know, and it's set up by eugenicists. But it's really hard to change that mindset. You know how hard it is to change people's mind about 9/11 and you know, the different truth subjects. It's very hard to change a conventional medical doctor's mind. Now, my husband, to his credit, is what?
Speaking of which, back on the creature from the Black Lagoon thing, I came with a really lame joke the other day. You know how truthers or whatever, vegans and vegetarians or whatever, they really like to have legumes, you know? And they always get demonized for their lifestyle. They're getting treated like it's the creature from the Black Lagoon.
That is cheesy. Uh-oh, that's not vegan now. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
No. And you know, vegan is good for some people, but not everybody. My daughter did it for a couple of years, and she's extremely knowledgeable about it, and even did the no honey thing. And she went to college, and she really figured out she couldn't stay warm in the winter, and she knew how to do it right. I mean, she wasn't, you know, she had really researched it, and was, and she's a great cook, and eats greens every day, and had a very varied vegan diet, but she started eating meat again, and she goes, you know, Mom, this is the first winter in a long time that I've been able to keep warm. So I think it's good for some people, and I think it's not good for others, but that's what our healthcare system in this country is not. I should call it healthcare. Yes, that's it. You know, that's what it doesn't provide. It doesn't provide any freedom, really. You have to do what they tell you to do.
There's a great lady named Pam Killeen. I've had her on the show a number of times. You should Google her name and mine.
Yeah.
And what she says is that humans, based on their ancestry, have certain ancestral foods that are specific to their type. Like, for example, she's from Scotland, and the Scots used to have lots of pork and fats and stuff like that, and they were perfectly healthy. And so she's able to have that kind of stuff, and she's perfectly healthy. Other people, on the other hand, they come from other areas of the world where they can have a lot of carbohydrates. Some people, none. Some people, no meat, and no meat is really good for them. So, you know, everybody's
right.
Here's the thing, every single time, there's no such thing as general rules to health. We're all bloody snowflakes in this business.
That's right. Absolutely. All right.
Well, thanks, Lisa, for your call.
Hey, thanks, Benny, and have a great day.
You too. All right. I love getting those calls. It's good. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If you want to call in. The number is 218-339-8525. We may have a guest after this break when we come back named Clyde Graff to talk about aerial 1080 poisoning and his new ventures to stop it. Basically, it's the most poisonous substance known to man, and it gets used in warfare to contaminate people's water supplies, and it's been dumped wholesale about $50 million worth into pristine water catchment areas in the New Zealand bush, where all the towns in the whole country basically draw their water supply from, and also all the bush where they go and hunting and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's clean and green New Zealand because they paint the 1080 poison pellets green. We'll be right back. Number two on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the American Freedom Radio Network with our AM FM affiliates all across the states, and also we have Rush FM and iFinity FM who play the show in New Zealand here and on their little network. So it is going out on live and real radio to real people, ladies and gentlemen. So it's not just some kind of game that we're playing here. We're actually trying to communicate to real audiences about real issues and kind of wake them up to the realities that we are not told the truth all the time. And, well, basically, that kind of rule applies in almost every sector you look at. But it is a very good idea to look specifically at individual sectors to see the monstrumental and quantitative perpetrations of scumbaggery that absolutely destroy people's lives and the environment. Yada, yada, yada. My very special guest today is Clyde Graff, coming at us live from the Waikato. Welcome, Clyde.
Hi, Vinny.
How are you today, my friend?
Can you pick me up, Vinny?
Oh, yeah.
You got me?
Yeah, I've got you.
Okay, good, good. So what are we discussing today? TV Wild?
TV Wild. Absolutely. I'd love to hear more about it.
Well, as you're quite aware, I've been involved with the 1080 issue in New Zealand for many years. Now we've had to think of, you know, a way that we can just break away a little bit from full-on 1080 activity work to something a little bit wider scope. So we've got a new website which is focusing on outdoors, hunting, fishing, shooting, a variety of stuff. And this site uploads videos and has programs and things available for people to look at free just by signing on. And it'll also have competitions and prizes and a shop starting, I think, today or tomorrow as well. So it's a bit of a variety and community-type website, I suppose, with lots of action for outdoors people. So it's not just focusing on New Zealand necessarily, but also overseas as well. We're interested in hearing and seeing from people from overseas, so that's where we're going now. The new site will also have cover things like news items and whatever. So, for example, we do a lot of filming out in the outdoors of New Zealand. We also cover things like 1080 drops. So if we're filming a drop somewhere, we can now just put that those clips straight to the site and have instant access for our followers and supporters. So it's quite a good platform for that sort of thing. We also allow other, like, just general public, if they've got something that they want to upload or put onto a news site, part of the news site, well, they can do that too. So that's where we're going with that, Vinny.
Wow, man, that sounds really good. So another thing that I wanted to get in with you, Clyde, was gun legislation and the gun grabbers from the UN and all of these types of people are just trying to take firearms off everything with fingers, basically. Have you been following this much at all?
No, look, I haven't followed it much, but we're well aware of it. For example, in Australia, I remember back when I was about, this is probably going back about 26 years odd in Australia, you could go for basically go to Kmart, be over 18, and just buy a gun, rifle, whatever, over the counter. There was no legislation at all in regard to purchasing firearms. Of course, in Australia, things have got a lot more difficult now, and to the extent that as soon as there's an issue with a firearm, public outcry, the opposition jumps on and says, well, we need to ban firearms, ban, ban, ban. Of course, this doesn't really achieve anything because the people using the firearms aren't the licensed users aren't a problem at all. So as far as New Zealand goes, we're still fairly good in New Zealand, pretty reasonable with the firearm licenses and ruling and stuff. It's not that difficult to get hold of firearms if you're licensed. And in Australia, for example, you need to be part of a club, whereas in New Zealand you don't. But I think, you know, it's like everything. As we progress in society, things just get tougher and tougher in regard to firearms, and I don't think it's going to stop. So I think the main thing is that we shouldn't all be, if you're a hunter, there's nothing wrong with going out and shooting an animal for the table as long as you're doing it humanely. And I think what happens more and more now is that the alarmists out there are trying to make out that, you know, it's a cruel and the evil hunters and stuff, when really hunters are pretty much responsible people just going out and harvesting an animal for the table. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, you know, here's the thing that I find that is wrong, though. Here's an article out of Scoop Independent News from Parliament. 1,000 legislators signed declaration on arms treaty. This is from Ross Robertson, the MP for Monaco East, Clyde. And what they've done is they've got these the Control of Arms Global Parliamentary Declaration to the Arms Trade Treaty. Has now been signed by over 1,000 legislators, including 80 from New Zealand, says MP Ross Robertson. The Arms Trade Treaty seeks to ensure the responsible control, trade and export of conventional weapons. So essentially what we're doing now is it doesn't matter what our parliament does or anything like that. A couple of MPs from our parliament can go visit and be part of a treaty deal, and that makes our legislation for us. So it matters not how good the gun legislation in our country is, Clyde. At this point, I'm starting to fear, because it seems that we won't have the ability to have our own gun legislation at all very soon, and we'll be forced
so you're
to
it's an international,
undertake global standards.
It's an international thing, is it? It's a overseeing body that will control firearm export and ownership internationally.
Yeah, it's under the Parliamentarians for Global Action, which is supported and financed by about half a very, very large small arms control lobbies that are financed by UN programs and all this kind of stuff. So it's basically, it's the same circle of characters, like a snake eating itself kind of thing, the same garbage coming from the same snake in a circle.
Yep.
And we've got 80 of our politicians at least that have signed up to this. And I think that also includes Winston Peters.
Well, I don't know how we could go. I mean, it's gone through pretty quietly, hasn't it? I suppose it's on Scoop. But, we'll see where that
goes. I'm looking down at the shares here. There are no shares for that thing. It has been tweeted twice.
Right. Right.
So okay. Virtually nobody knows about this.
Okay. Well,
so
I don't know what
the scary part, because it's the same in every single sector that we look at. I mean, your focus is 1080, and you could sit here for literally hours and tell us about its dangers and everything like that.
Well that's
and,
right.
And here we are. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, that's, I mean, you're absolutely right there. I think that in New Zealand, there's currently a population of, over 4 million. Now, there's 220,000 firearm users, or licensed firearm licenses, if you like. Out of that, you've got 30,000 duck shooting licenses per annum. So there's 30,000 active bird shooters. But in regard to firearm ownership in general, yeah, it's 220,000. So it's a fair chunk of the community that are owners of firearms. So I don't know how far they'll get with banning it. But as far as exporting and importing and that thing, I suppose no one's manufacturing guns in New Zealand, so I suppose that everything's being imported. So if they put a ban on imports, well, then I suppose it'll be a matter of years before the guns start to disappear into out of circulation. And perhaps that's what they're waiting for, a long-term move. But I haven't seen the report, Vinny, so I'll... What was the title of that report?
I've just emailed it to you, Clyde, so we'll be coming up to a break in about 10 minutes, so you could probably quickly breeze over it. It's funny, like something this important you'd expect would be everywhere, and not to mention you'd figure the article would be really big. It's a couple of paragraphs and that's it. Yeah. I'm sorry. I just find sneaky, dodgy tyranny incredibly hilarious because it's so cynical. Yeah, and I find myself very cynical at times. And the real problem with being cynical is that most of the time you find out that you're correct when you're being cynical about government or international agencies or financiers or anything, really. It's quite sad. But anyway... Yeah. Go ahead.
We've got a slow line, but in regard to just for your listeners, in regard to looking at the new website we've got, which we're running, is tbwild.co.nz. So it's tbwild.co.nz, and as I say, if there's any, that's actually one I'll put on website too, Vinny. That news story you've just got there. That'll go onto the site and keep people informed. And what else is happening in the world of firearms in New Zealand, Vinny, if you're up to it all there?
Well, concealed carry, or rather pistol possession, I've been looking into this a little bit more lately, and it turns out in the United States with people that have concealed carries, they have been able to prevent a number of holdups, mass shootings, school shootings, to the point where they say that they prevent close to, I think 500,000 deaths or rapes or anything like that, versus the 11,000 or so people that are killed by firearms every year, and something like 2% of concealed carries ever actually wind up firing a weapon at an assailant at any point, and only about half of those are actually even firing in the direction of the assailant rather than just a warning shot. And of the half of those 2% of those, I think only 2% of them actually kill them. So it's statistically much higher that the more guns you have in your society, the less crime there is. There was even a town that... had a city ordinance that everybody had to have a firearm in their home. Burglaries, assaults dropped nearly to zero. In contrast, when you have a look at, say, Washington, D.C., where they had handgun bans, the murder rate skyrocketed. And then you look at history, every single time, whether it's been the Chinese under Chairman Mao, who killed 60 million Chinese, or the Turks, who killed, I think it was 1.4 million Armenians, or Hitler, who killed 6 million Jews, or Stalin, who killed like 14 million peasants and 7 million Ukrainians. What did they all have in common? Very strict gun bans. And I think that this is the first time ever, Clyde, that we are going to see global gun bans. And it'll all be done through these treaties here. So regardless of what the news is in New Zealand, it all reflects the exact same thing that has happened all the way through history. They're trying to ban guns so that people cannot defend themselves. Once people can't defend themselves, police state, tyranny, it's on. And there'll be no way people can fight back.
Well, in New Zealand, as far as firearm users, licensed firearms users, there's only 1.5 well, I suppose 1.5 deaths per annum is too many, but it averages out to 1.5. So it's in regard to accidental shootings. In regard to firearms, people dying from other causes, I'm not sure what the statistics there, but I'd imagine I'd say that the majority is coming from the police in defence situations. But in regard to America, well, the statistics are way different. So it's 11,000 versus 1.5 in New Zealand. It's there's not much argument to advocate for firearm bans in this country.
Well, exactly, and it's regardless, because all of these countries, they seem to have their own different rates of firearm-related violence, crimes, or whatever. But the thing that makes them all the same is how ineffective legislation is at getting weapons out of the hands of criminals who will use them for, shall we say, not very good purposes or lawful purposes. And the thing is, when you ban a gun, who are the people that obey that law? The criminals or the law-abiding citizens who would never use their gun for the commission of a crime anyway? What do you think, Clyde? Who's more likely to obey that gun ban law if, let's say, all the all the P dealers and gang members and stuff like that that have got sawn off shotguns, government issues a gun ban law, who's the ones going to turn in their guns? Will it be those gang members, or will it be the very friendly, nice farmers and everything that keep a 22 or a 308 on the property just in case, or they want to go out possum shooting or whatever? Doesn't matter.
Well, they've had amnesties in Australia. That's exactly right. It's not the responsible firearm users. Once again, it is the crims out there that get access to the guns, and there's probably, goodness knows the number of unlicensed weapons in circulation at any time. So, yeah, banning them is not an answer. Who knows what the answer is in regard to firearm use, but hunting in New Zealand is a big, well, it was a big pastime. It was, hunting in New Zealand was an industry for many years in regard to possums trapping, possum hunting, and then, of course, venison recovery, deer in the mountains. Between the years of probably 1960 and 1990, you'd have what we call bush hunters wandering around the hills of New Zealand shooting deer, carrying them out and making a living off them. Helicopters were also eerily shooting them. So guns has been a big part of New Zealand, or rifle use for many years. However, with the use of more and more 1080 poison and the reduction in game animals, it is getting harder to find them out there in the hills.
All right, well, I'm sorry, Clyde. We'll have to go to a break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Clyde, if you go to your computer, I've sent you a couple of emails. We'll be right back.
Never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me?
The dubstepiest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from clean, green New Zealand. It's so green, in fact, that if you walk through the pristine bush, you will find bright green, shiny, incredibly poisonous tablet bait everywhere. And it's just so tasty, like cinnamon, that even your baby will love it too. My very special guest is Clyde Graff. I may be taking this not as seriously as I should. If so, sorry about that. But Clyde, welcome back.
Thanks, Vinny. Now, interestingly, just talking about the 1080 issue there in New Zealand, take Wellington, Wainui Omata catchment area, which is, I think that's where the Wellington water supply comes from. That's getting about 40,000 kilos of 1080 poison dropped into its catchment around the forest, which go into the water catchment itself. Now, there's a bit of outrage because people don't really want that much deadly 1080 poison dropped into their water catchment. However, the lines being fed to the people from the government departments is simply, oh, well, this stuff breaks down. It's not an issue. You'll have to drink 2,000 litres a day to get a lethal dose, and that's that, you know. And this is going on all across New Zealand in just disregard for animal welfare and human concerns. So it's, that is a concern, and it just goes on in this country more and more. And then you've got these new legislations coming in all the time. I've just had a look at that firearms treaty thing. It's getting quite a bit of momentum by the looks of it, many involving, like you said, 47 countries, I think it is. And we'll soon be left with just a poisonous forest and nothing but back to bow and arrows or spears and running around on horseback, I think.
You know what, Clyde? I think The Hunger Games is very prophetic, don't you?
I haven't seen The Hunger Games, so I'll have to have a little look at it, but I know there's some bit of archery in there, and, well, that's probably the way it's going.
Well, you know what's interesting, Clyde? A whole lot of archery places around the country have experienced an enormous swelling in the numbers of interest. And you know what that tells me? How well susceptible this entire country is to the suggestion of even fictional characters, let alone the fictional character of the possum.
Oh, it's deadly. It's got tuberculosis. It's turning our New Zealand bush into a wasteland. Let's dump it with the most toxic chemical known to man that every single country has banned outdoor use for.
Well, that's right. We're very naive in this country, and in regard to just speaking of the possum and the TB, I see the Animal Health Board here has responded to some comments posted on that poison drop that's about to happen in Wellington. And the AHB are stating, well, you know, we've got evidence, DNA evidence, that, you know, the TB in a possum has been found in this particular cow from a particular area. So they're saying, what they're suggesting is that the possums are giving the TB, bovine TB, I might add, which is cow TB, to the cow. So they're saying the possum is giving it to the cow. But in fact, this is another case of trying to hoodwink the public, you see. The public read that and say, oh my goodness, that's outrageous. When in reality, it is the cow giving the bovine tuberculosis to a possum. Now, there's never been an outbreak of bovine tuberculosis in wild possums in New Zealand ever. In fact, it's rare to get a possum with TB. It's very rare to find one. And when they do find one, when I say they, the Animal Health Board, it's almost a time for a party because it's another excuse to blame the possum. If you want to get rid of TB in New Zealand, destroy the farms or destroy the animals on the farms in an area that has TB and turn it into a park, a forest, whatever. And in several years, the TB issue will be gone. I believe that's what they do in Canada. Don't mark me on that, but I think they've tried that in Canada. If there's TB in an area, close the farm, turn it into a forestry or whatever, and the TB will disperse and eventually be gone. But TB's big business in New Zealand, Vinny. Big business. And it's not, you know, the Animal Health Board stated several years back that they're sort of looking at winding up their TB program in about 2013, 2014. That's just about up. So what they're doing now is they're saying, we're going to extend that to 2030. And that's probably about when most of them are retired. So it should just see those guys right.
But, can I ask, do they also include in all of this, you know, special mentions that they're like immune from prosecution or anything of that nature?
Well, I think in this country, politicians and those that are involved with government departments are immune to prosecution. There is something that there was a bill or a something like that going through, I believe, where... Oh, no, beg your pardon. It's coming from the UK. It's called... what's it called? Eradicating Ecocide, which is... Who's doing that now? Eradicating Ecocide. What she's doing over there, it's a UK lawyer. She's trying to bring in pass an international treaty where the governments or the government departments that are involved in Ecocide, like 1080 use in New Zealand, are responsible, held responsible down the track. So, and she's progressing really well on that. That's going through to, I think they're trying to get that through into the United Nations, but, you know, things like that have a lot of resistance, obviously, because you've got to get past the bureaucrats. But it's a very real thing, this Ecocide, and they are immune, certainly in this country. They just come, lay their eggs and fly off, set themselves up, you know, for a
now,
prime
now, here's
retirement.
The other thing that I worry about. I mean, it's going into the water catchment areas, and I think it was either you or your brother Steve that told me that that 1080, when it gets into a water supply, you're consuming it, it's an endocrine disruptor, and that can start having effects on you if it's even if the water's one part per trillion or something like that.
Well, no, it's not a known endocrine disruptor, from what I understand. It is a hormone. It's a suspected hormone disruptor. It is a male reproductive toxin. Now, these are all issues that are being ignored in this country. Health issues are being ignored. If you Google 1080 in New Zealand and health, all you'll see is you'll have to drink, you know, if it was in the water, you'll have to drink 2,000 litres to die. You'll have to eat two cattle beasts if it was in the cattle beast. So they're only focusing on the acute poisoning, not the chronic poisoning. The chronic poisoning is an issue because, for example, if you're a lady and you're pregnant and you just get a minute dose, as you're saying, parts per billion, parts per trillion even, is what some of the scientists are suggesting, that can have an impact on the on your baby, unborn baby. So there's no research being done into this.
I ran into a lady outside a meeting at Devonport, I think. You remember when all those dogs and everything was dying around Rangitoto, incidentally at around the exact same time when they were dumping bait pellets all over it. And the lady outside, I think one of the women got thrown out because she threw one of her tumours at the guy from the government, from the dock representative. And the lady who walked out with us, she has come from the Waikato downriver from where they'd had a 1080 drop. And there was something like seven babies in that small town that were born with extra holes in the boys' penises and things like this. It was quite horrific.
There's a lot of anecdotal evidence that 1080 is harmful, coming from rural areas in New Zealand. That's why in those rural areas where the people are getting the most poison dropped around them are protesting and are concerned. As the mayor of Hokitika pointed out, that even if 1080 wasn't harming these people physically, it's certainly harming them emotionally, because you know it's the case of, well, you can become quite sick by just even worrying about this poison being dropped around your homes and into your water supplies. The thing is, for people that are interested, they could find a link to Poisoning Paradise, which will show covers all the issues with regard to 1080 poisoning. It's quite interesting. It is made in the US, Alabama. It's the only manufacturer of 1080 in the world, and New Zealand does import the most 1080 out of any country in the world at 90%, around 90% of world supply. So we're certainly going through it.
And you can find that video, ladies and gentlemen, at my YouTube channel, which is at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and GorillaMedia.co.nz. The name of the YouTube channel is Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, and the name of the documentary is Poisoning Paradise. It's in full quality. I ripped it off the DVD myself. Thanks, Clyde.
No problem.
Uploaded it there for everybody to see. And you did an earlier documentary as well called A Shadow of Doubt?
That's right. Shadow of Doubt, we did. That was our first attempt, if you like it, presenting the issue of 1080 in New Zealand, because up until then, the only view of the use of 1080 poison was being presented by the Department of Conservation and the users of 1080. There was no other side of the story. So we went out and filmed some poison drops and found the dead deer and talked to the farmers and people that have had experiences with 1080 and put that together onto A Shadow of Doubt. We interviewed Animal Health Board, Forests and Bird, which is an organisation advocating for birds and forests, obviously, and gave these guys the opportunity to have their say. A Shadow of Doubt was a soft approach. It wasn't pointing any fingers at anyone. It just went about just to just show what was going on a little bit. And we were pretty naive with the whole thing ourselves, going a lot, learning as we went along. Then in 2007, the government, IRMA was called, Environmental Risk Management Authority, investigated the use of 1080 and allowed it to be continued. So after that, we were filming in the Kahurangi National Park in the South Island and came across a weka. A weka is a endemic, native endemic, meaning nowhere else in the world, bird feeding on a possum carcass. And we had no idea that the weka was a scavenger, a carnivorous or omnivorous scavenger of carcasses and meat, and etc. And here's this bird. So we got the shock of our lives. We filmed and photographed it and decided, crikey, we better get back into this investigation into 1080 poison use in New Zealand, because these carcasses are left to rot all around the hillsides, through the forests, after a poison drop. Now, the thing about 1080 is it continues to poison. It causes secondary poisoning. So the thing that feeds on that gets poisoned. And in the UK, in the US, the manufacturer's label states all carcasses and unused baits must be picked up and burned or buried deeply. But in New Zealand, they tell us, our authorities tell us, well, we don't have any mammals over here. We don't have any teeth, so we don't have to worry about picking up carcasses. Well, of course, we have the kea. The kea is the only carrion-eating parrot in the world. It's endangered. And yet it loves to eat 1080 baits, and it also eats the dead possum carcasses and deer carcasses that are left around the forest around here. There's also the weka. There's moorpork, which is an owl, a native owl. They eat the rats that die. You got pukeko, which is a swamp-type bird. It also eats carrion. So as far as trying to hoodwink the public again, telling them, oh, no, we don't need to worry about picking up carcasses or baits, it's once again a lie. It's as simple as that. It's a lie. And that there seems to be no concern for the welfare of our wildlife. Even if it's not killing our wildlife, which it is, but if it's not, even if it's sublethal doses we're not killing through secondary poisoning, you're still putting their reproductive possibilities at risk and for future generations of those species. So it just seems grossly irresponsible, and you just keep shaking your head and wonder why they keep persisting with this stuff and dropping it.
Hypothetically, Clyde, hypothetically, let's say they're doing it intentionally, and all these bad effects is exactly what the people who are sanctioning this, financing it, and covering it up, and brainwashing people in the media, is exactly what they want. What kind of person would we be looking at?
A terrorist? I don't know.
Well, see, this is the thing.
I don't know what they are. I don't know what they are and what their agenda is. I don't know. I mean,
you
can't help but wonder.
You actually hit it on the head there, because terrorism is a system of government. You look it up in the dictionary, that's what it is. And it uses fear and coercion tactics to rule people. That's what the system of terrorism is as a government. And that sounds exactly how so much of our legislation gets put in place. 1080, asset sales, the whole lot. Everything seems to be all lumped together. Everybody gets made afraid, and then they passively accept it because they are told that there's no alternative. Clyde Graff is my guest from thegraffboys.com. That's Graff with an F, not a PH, because he's not that acidic. We'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face.
All when my back's turned. They dropped 1080 all over the back of my place.
Without a trace. Oh, no, no.
You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Oh, no,
the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, most of which from government, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. Clyde Graff is my very special guest. And also, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Coca-Bismol. It's a mixture of Coca-Cola and Pepto-Bismol. It soothes your stomach as it eats it away. And also, we want to mention our other... Yes, I know, that's very funny. And we also want to mention our other sponsors, the Department of Conservation, otherwise known as DOC, who are just on the horn to... And they've agreed to hold an anti-tuberculosis fundraiser. And what we're going to do is it's going to be the New Zealand helicopter tour of Dame Edna, sponsored by DOC. And she'll be accompanying the 1080 drop pilots in an attempt to attract the required targets into the drop zone by yelling out, "Hello, possums!" Clyde Graff is my guest. Welcome back. Clyde, are you there?
Sorry, Vinny, I just heard you say that. That's quite funny. Look, something we're working on at the moment, because the in regard to the 1080 use in New Zealand, it's you're fighting a hard battle. You know, it's a big bureaucracy. It's entrenched, and it's more of a philosophy and a religion than anything now in the country. So we're going along the lines of doing T-shirt campaigns over the next few months where it'll be more humorous. For example, one of the subjects will be on the back of the T-shirt. There'll be a possum, and it's hugging a kiwi and holding an umbrella at the same time as a chopper passes over with the 1080 pellets. That's the sort of line we're taking now, a bit more humorous, not really pointing anything at anyone in particular, for example, DOC or AHB, but just making the point of what's really going on. Another one will be something like The Last Supper, so there'll be a group of wildlife sitting around a table, and there'll be 1080 pellets there, and the kiwi will be at the head of the table, and he'll be pointing out this is the Last Supper. that's sort of the lines we're going to be looking at going down next, in conjunction with the new TV Wild website. So, we're just hitting a brick wall all the time, it seems, over here.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a testament to the strength of the human spirit. And no matter how many brick walls you put in front of us, we keep smashing straight through them. Have you noticed? It doesn't matter how long it takes. Eventually, the good guys manage to win. What's interesting now, though, is I'm starting to see movements relating to everything that the bad guys are doing, propping up in opposition to them, you know? They start selling the assets, somebody starts opposing it. They start dropping 1080, somebody starts opposing it. Everything, everywhere that's bad, that's happening right now on this earth, has somebody doing something about it. Isn't that interesting?
Well, I think a lot has to do with the internet now, doesn't it? Because the internet, until I think Google or whatever, whoever they are that will control it and censor what's going through the internet, you've got a lot more freedom of information. the people can access it a lot quicker. They can get around. They can be in touch with America, for example, instantly. Whereas, you know, you look back 20 years ago and you'd have to get on the old blower for to get in touch with someone in the US, and apart from being expensive, you know, it's a time thing. So I think the internet has been an amazing tool, if you like, for, you know, getting people on board and getting interested and informed.
Mm-hmm. And bear in mind, Clyde, if you wanted to publish your Wild TV episodes on YouTube or anything like that, you know, I'll upload the episodes to my channel for you if you like. I can just give you the login and password. You can just upload them direct from your computer.
Right, good as gold.
Yeah, give people access, eh? Because I think... part of this fight that we're all fighting, Clyde, is something that you're, I believe you're probably at the head on more than a lot of New Zealanders, actually, bush culture and bush life, getting food out of there, as well as enjoying it and preserving it. Because what I see happening now is that food prices are going up substantially, whilst at the same time this 1080 is killing off all the wildlife. So any wild food that people might go to, if food gets way too expensive or, heaven forbid, even starts to run out, has already been eradicated, and it'll leave yes. people 100% dependent on the government.
Yes, it is. That's another possibility or scenario that pops up quite a bit here, and that is that, yeah, as you say, up until now, you know, you could just whip out the back and get yourself a deer or a pig, you know, and have a nice Sunday roast. And now, of course, a lot of the areas, well, at least half the country, has had 1080 poison dropped across it, and you don't know what you're eating there. The numbers, as you say, the wildlife is dropping right back. And food prices, definitely, it's getting more expensive by the year here. There's no question about that. Where's it going to come from? So I think you better start saving, Vinny, and get yourself your private block and fence it off and try and keep Department of Conservation and those guys away.
What am I going to do, Clyde? Get surface-to-air missile batteries? I mean, you can't keep these people away. I mean, you and I both know that even when farmers' land is, like, right close to the bush, they'll just drop 1080 pellets all through it anyway, and their dogs die and all of that kind of stuff. These people don't have any respect. There is nowhere to escape anymore, Clyde. That's the worst part of it.
No, that is true. That's the way it is, and they've got the power to do that, to go over your property whether you like it or not. I don't know, Vinny, but I think if everyone does their little bit rather than become too complacent, you know, we might just last for a few more years.
I'm not interested in lasting. I'm interested in thriving. I mean, here's another thing. Solutions, Clyde. How can we actually bring the life that's been destroyed back to the bush? I mean, what's the best viable alternative to the current 1080? I mean, just not having the 1080, that's a better alternative than having the 1080, yes? But what's even better than that?
Well, what's working at the moment, for example, is a test case or a case where 50,000 hectares of forest is being managed without the use of aerial 1080. They're using trapping methods to catch possums and stoats, and that's in the Yirrawarra National Park, and it's working. DOC are involved with that, from what I understand, as well. It seems that is the answer. Target your areas. Target the pest that you're after, not the entire ecosystem. And that's all we're advocating for. We're not suggesting that if people don't want to trap a possum or a rat, that they shouldn't do it. But we would like to see more truth out there. For example, the possum has been, for the last 20 years, the big, as you were saying earlier, the big fear. It was the fear of the possum, you know. The possum is stripping New Zealand bush, is what we were told. Of course, it's utter nonsense. It's a blatant lie. Possums aren't stripping the bush anywhere. And
is there an argument that possums, is there any argument that possums are actually beneficial to the bush at all?
Yes, there is an argument that the possum's beneficial to the bush. In fact, the possum replaces some other species that may have become extinct over years, but the possum is responsible for around 20 to 25% of total seed rain. So, in fact, the possum's doing benefit there. 70% of seed rain for some species. So the possum is spreading seeds, okay? So they're not, the seeds aren't destroyed in the gut of the possum. We're told in this country, day after day, practically, the possums are ravaging birds. Well, 1,600 possum guts were ripped open by scientists, and they were desperately searching for bird matter, vertebrate matter. None was found. They did another little study of about 40 and found a little bit of greenfinch in one gut. But that's 1,600, over 1,600 possums, and no evidence of birds. The possums aren't. The fact is they're not out there ravaging the nests. And yet, Department of Conservation, the Animal Health Board, will produce a little scratchy old video of this possum, you know, running out of a hole because it's being chased out by a kiwi, and make it look like the possum is attacking a kiwi.
Been eating,
you know,
the eggs.
It's, yeah, I mean, it's propaganda. It's that simple. The possum is a resource, even if you like, in New Zealand, rather than just kill them and waste them. They're valuable to be used for even the fur industry.
Are they in any way like prolific breeders? I mean, is there even a likelihood that they'll
go out
of control?
In this country, you've got people, we've gone to meetings in this country to show our documentary. We came across people saying that possums are breeding fast and they're exploding, and a lot of the city folk aren't aware about the breeding of the possum. The truth is, the possum has one young per year, just one. They don't explode in numbers. Now, it is on rare occasions, and it's very rare, a possum will have twins, but they breed once a year, that's it. When we hear in this country that Department of Conservation, AHB, they do a poison drop and they say they've killed 99% of the possums, 2 years later they say the possums have exploded, they're back, right? Population's too big.
And they're just lying. Oh, sorry, Clyde, we've come to the end of the show. I'm sorry, Clyde, we've come to the end of the show. TheGraphBoys.com, ladies and gentlemen, TheGraphBoys.com. Clyde, thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen.
TheGraphBoys.org.